sit around a table. They are gathered for a mid-morning coffee break, perhaps, or maybe it's an evening drink. They know each other reasonably well, but they are not lifelong buds. Two of them, Jack and Trish, were coworkers once upon a time. They don't work together anymore, but they remain friends. Jack's friend Jill joined them. Yes, it's Jack and Jill. They became friends because someone else said to Jack, "Hey, you should be friends with Jill. It'd be funny." And since Jack is the sort of person who does things on a dare, he talked her up and they became friends. Trish and Jill got to know each other through Jack and discovered they both go to the same gym. Sometimes they take classes together. Trish's ex-girlfriend, they were only together for a few weeks before deciding to be just friends, came too. Her, Emma is her name, and she had gotten along with the whole crew, Jack and Jill and Trish, and so the foursome gathered on occasion. Emma was, paradoxically, the most religious of the bunch. I say paradoxically, not because of her sexual orientation, of course, but because she'd been raised without any religious tradition at all. Her parents were committed secularists and found her faith to be very odd, but Emma loved it. She loved the smells and bells, and the music at Grace Episcopal, where she went, was old and mysterious, at least to her ears. She felt at home and at peace. This was her 11th year, then, of observing Lent. "You guys," she said around the table, "you don't get it. It's not about giving something up. That's what everyone thinks, that you give something up. I mean, you do. Fasting, sacrifice is part of it, but it's not about that. It's about taking up as much as it is about giving up. You're supposed to give alms to the poor or volunteer or just be nicer and more compassionate too. The reason to give something up is so that you are more aware of your gifts and will be more generous with them to others. It's not just a divinely sanctioned diet plan. Really, it's not." She said this with some force. "What are you giving up?" the others had asked her a few minutes earlier, and Emma had told them that she was giving up alcohol. When she shared this, Trish had laughed out loud. "No, thank you," she said. "No way," which got Emma started on why Lent was about more than giving something up. It's about being humble so we can be sacred, remembering that we are stardust, and to stardust we shall return. If I can insert a little narrator's comment here in the middle of the story, I'll tell you that personally, I am observing Lent for the second time. More and more Unitarian Universalists are observing Lent as a time of spiritual renewal, yes, and of simplicity and generosity. Folks are doing it in very different ways. We're Unitarians, after all. We don't have to follow the rules about how to do it. We're pledging for the 40 days to be more courageous or more compassionate, to go without something and give that money, time, energy to the work of justice and compassion. Last year, I gave up caffeine, the first 3 days of which were very hard, but I made it through. I didn't do as much of the rest of the spiritual work as I could last year, and this year, like Emma, I'm foregoing alcohol, which is proving so far not to be that difficult, and hoping to use that discipline and practice, however, as a way to remind myself of important spiritual truths. I don't need what I sometimes think I need. I have much to be grateful for. And because I'm doing this with others, known and unknown, people who are doing it together, I'm part of a community in practice together. That feels good. But enough of the narrator butting into the story. Let's go back to the coffee shop or the bar, wherever it is our friends are sitting around a table. Emma is explaining why Lent has come to be important to her. "You see," she says, "for me, who always thinks that I need more, it's so powerful to remember that I'm fine. I have enough. I am enough. I'm loved as I am, and I can love others as they are. And Lent is, for me, a reminder of that." Trish apologizes for laughing out loud, though she reiterates her position that she, Trish, would strongly prefer to not give anything up. For her, Lent is full of hypocrisy and self-righteousness. She recognizes that that's not true for her friend Emma, but that's her truth and that's her experience. She tells the table that when she was growing up, Lent was only about giving up and giving up something more impressive than everyone else. It was show. And she does not remember her parents or her family talking about giving things away. She does remember the verses that she heard about, if you want eternal life, give everything away that you own to the poor and follow me. But her family didn't give everything away. They gave away one small thing and kept all the rest of their privilege. Trish remembers vividly in her American literature class, her sophomore year of college, reading a poem by Oliver Wendell Holmes Sr., not the Supreme Court Justice, but his dad, about this and thinking that it fit her family and the people she knew so well that she memorized it and has it memorized still. It expresses her opinion about Lent and so much of what goes for living simply. Emma, Jack, and Jill prod her, "Say it. Say it if you still haven't memorized. We want to hear it." And Trish finally agrees. But she warns them, first, she warns them, they must listen closely, for it is a subtle joke and not a straightforward poem. And it is 19th century language. So they put down their cups, and Trish clears her throat and begins with the title. Contentment by Oliver Wendell Holmes Sr. Little I ask, my wants are few. I only wish a hut of stone, a very plain brown stone will do, that I may call my own, and close at hand is such a one in yonder street that fronts the sun. Plain food is quite enough for me. Three courses are as good as 10. If nature can subsist on three, thank heaven for three. Amen. I always thought cold victual nice. My choice would be vanilla ice. I care not for much for gold or land. Give me a mortgage here and there, some good bank stock, some note of hand, or trifling railroad share. I only ask that fortune send a little more than I shall spend. Honors are silly toys, I know, and titles are but empty names. I would perhaps be plenipo, but only near St. James. I'm very sure I should not care to fill our gubernator's chair. Jewels or baubles, 'tis a sin to care for such unfruitful things. One good-sized diamond in a pin, some not so large in rings, a ruby and a pearl or so will do for me. I laugh at show. Of books but few, some 50 score for daily use and bound for wear, the rest upon an upper floor. A little luxury there of red Morocco's gilded gleam and vellum rich as country cream. Busts, cameos, and gems, such things as these which others show for pride, I value for their power to please and selfish churls deride. One Stradivarius, I confess. Two Merchams I would fain profess. Wealth's wasteful tricks I will not learn, nor ape the glittering upstart fool. Shall not carved tables serve my turn, but all must be of Buhl? Give grasping pomp its double share, I ask but one recumbent chair. Thus humble let me live and die, nor long for Midas's golden touch. If heaven more generous gifts deny, I shall not miss them much. Too grateful for the blessing lent of simple tastes and mine content. When she finishes, the friends applaud. It's rare for someone to recite poetry these days, and they appreciate the humor of it. Who knew 19th century poets could be funny? One Stradivarius, I confess. And they recognize the truth of the poem, too. Some of those who speak most about giving up have so much in the first place they'd hardly notice. Trish herself does fine economically, and her parents were fine, too. But she knows people who really struggle to make ends meet. A neighbor of hers moved out last month. The foreclosure was finalized and the bank took back the house. The neighbor is staying at a cheap apartment. He got laid off years ago and he got a new job after burning through a lot of savings, but the new job doesn't pay as well as the old one. You want to go to him and say, give something up? What would that be? He does sport sometimes, you know, on fresh vegetables. Last week, the neighbor had an iced coffee. It had been a long, sleepless night and a long day ahead of him, so he spent $3.50 to stay awake. Some might judge him, I suppose, but Trish doesn't. Trish thinks it's pretty outrageous for those who are well-to-do and always have been to critique the life choices of the down and out. Something about the speck and the log in your own eye, all that. She says so at the table, and Emma in particular is in agreement. Lent, she admits, can sometimes be a form of spiritual abuse. Anti-consumerism in general can be a kind of class prejudice if you're not careful. It's important for us to remember that real lives, real people, are at the core of this and not some ideology. Look at yourself, says Lent, says every spiritual practice and every spiritual teacher worth anything. Look at yourself. Look at your own spirit, your own sense of peace and gratitude for life, and judge not others. Judge not others. Live your life. Give up or take up what you need to give up or take up. It's not our place to do that for someone else. Trish is glad to hear this from Emma. Religion was one of the reasons they didn't stay dating, but in this case, they seem to have common ground. And Jill, too, seems fine with this approach. She nods her head. But Jack scowls. That's all well and good, he says, except for the fact that the planet is at stake. Jack isn't always the most welcome guest at the party. And Trish and Jill and Emma are not surprised to hear him raise this issue, for they've heard him talk about it before. And they agree with him in principle, though the implications of it are a little bigger than they quite know what to do with. It's fine, Jack says, to say that we should each look out after our own spiritual welfare. Couldn't agree more with that, but we all need to start giving things up, and not just for Lent. 40 days isn't going to cut it. We need a different spirituality, an ecological spirituality, a spirituality for the reality of climate change and the possibility of the sixth mass extinction. We go around strutting our stuff, so happy to be living in the biggest house in the world, but it's going to collapse, and we'll be left in the ruins. I'm not exaggerating, says Jack. Years ago, scientists agreed we needed to hold the amount of carbon in the air to 350 parts per million if we didn't want to have cataclysmic climate change, billion refugees, land flooded. That's why the group's called 350. Last year, carbon dioxide hit 400 parts per million. It's a runaway train. You can talk about all the material and spiritual benefits of simplicity, being happier with less, knowing what's important, giving away the extra to the poor, even some environmental benefits like less stuff in landfills or less mining and so on. That's all fine, it's all bonus, but let's be clear. Jack's getting a little worked up. Let's be clear. Changing our consumer culture isn't a matter of spiritual wholeness, it's a matter of survival. Jack's soliloquy hangs there in the air like the smoke from an extinguished candle. They don't want him to be right, but they know that he is. He speaks more calmly now. We can't just give up meat on Fridays. We have to cut our consumption of beef in half at least, if not all the way, and everyone's got to do it. We can't buy one less thing. We need to create a local economy of sustainability. We have to reinvent how we live and where we live and how we power our lives. Maybe Lent should be about that, about the real world and what we're going to do about it. And the promise, I will tell you, goes unspoken but still made between these four friends, that they will do more. Emma decides in her head that it won't just be alcohol, but also beef that she gives up for the season. And maybe not as a strict rule, but as a general practice, she does not add it back into her diet starting on Easter Sunday. Trish decides she's going to call her senator and write a letter and send a little money. She's more of the activist type, and that's what she can do. Jill mentally resets her thermostats and pledges to actually do it when she gets home. She can get an extra blanket. It's not a big deal. They don't discuss it, and they each decide something different. But each on their own make the commitment, whatever it is that they give up or take up for this or any other season, for this or any other spiritual practice, will not be for its own sake, will not be because of habit or ego, but for the sake of the planet that we share together, for the sake of sustainable justice. The table is silent for a moment, not awkward, but reflective. They take sips of their drinks, coffee, tea, water, beer, wine, whatever it is they're each drinking. Jill hasn't spoken much, and they sort of turn to her as if waiting for some insight from her. But she waves them off. I don't know, she says. I don't think I have much to add, really. I don't practice Lent like Emma does. It sounds like it works for you. That's great. It's not for me. We did it when I was a kid, but unlike Trish, I never had strong feelings about it, positive or negative. It's just another thing we did that I didn't really understand and I don't do anymore. And Jack, yeah, you're right. We all know that you are. We need to be serious about it. It's real. But I don't have a way to synthesize everyone's perspective together or anything like that. And she stops. Feeling there's more to be said, they wait. And she speaks again. I mean, do you know what I mean? When you step back from everything, it's just, life is pretty amazing. I guess that's what I'm thinking. Leaves flutter lightly in the breeze, and where the earth splits, crystals glitter in the early sun. To be gathered here with friends, talking about things that matter, this is a gift. I'm grateful for the conversation, for your spirit, Emma, for your passion and your humor, Trish. The earth is precious and marvelous, and I'm grateful for it and committed to trying to live with simplicity for the sake of us all and those to come. And Jack, thank you for keeping us honest. Just feel grateful. Do you know what I mean? That's the feeling I'm having. I know it's not perfect, but I feel grateful. And Emma nods. That's what Lent is for me, a time to return to gratitude, to be simple. It's a way of thanksgiving for the gifts of life. And Trish has no objection to this point of view. Gratitude, she says, is what hypocrites and egoists lack when they pretend to be holier than thou, more important, but they are not. If thanksgiving makes us humble and a nicer person, then I'm for it. And Jack could not agree more. It's what is under my anger, he explains. The earth is our only home. This life is our only life. It is precious and amazing and worthy of our love and our care. This is what I'm trying to say. Eventually, their time together comes to an end, and they go their separate ways, off to face their nights and their days. Each, for their own reason, decides to try to live with a little more contentment and simplicity, to embrace their modest-sized shell, their life as it is, full of gifts, and not long for the biggest house in the world. Their reasons are spiritual and religious and humanistic and ecological and scientific and also just a nebulous longing for something more essential in a world of distraction. They need not have the same reasons, of course, nor choose exactly the same ways to respond to the invitation, but each of them feels the calling out of their gratitude for life, the earth, for community, out of their humility and longing for justice, out of their desire for a life worth living, they find ways to live with less instead of more, to enjoy the simple gifts and call that a blessing. This day, I invite you to do the same. Your reasons can be whatever they might be, spiritual, ritual, ecological, humanistic, or unclear longing. Your practice can be whatever matters to you, what makes a difference in your life and the world. We'll each do it in our own way, But I assure you that our four friends are onto something. The life of simplicity is the life of thanksgiving, and it is the life of beauty and meaning. In a world of distraction and disposability, finding ways to hear and follow that still, small voice within, to say, hush, somebody's calling your name, sounds like justice. I assure you that this is the life worthy of your effort, your attention, and your love. I invite you to that life. You need not be perfect. I'm certainly not, but I'm trying, and I invite you to try with me. Accept the invitation in your own way. And 40 days from now, or 45, or whenever it is we have the conversation, let's see what we've learned together. For now, let us sing. Let's rise in body or spirit.